This is Barron's Live. Each week, we bring you live conversations from our newsrooms about what's moving the market right now. On this podcast, we take you inside those conversations, the stories, the ideas, and the stocks to watch so you can invest smarter. Now, let's dial in.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Barron's Live, our daily webcast and podcast. I'm Lauren Rublin. Thanks for joining us today for a look at the week ahead in the markets and stocks in the news. My guest is Barron's Deputy Editor Ben Levison, and no one watches markets quite like Ben. There's not much this week in the way of earnings news, but there is plenty to talk about and plenty to think about regarding interest rates in the market and the changing of the guard at Boeing and much more. So, Ben, welcome to Barron's Live, and let's get this show started.
Thanks, Lauren. Glad to be here.
Happy to have you. So I thought we'd start this week, Ben, by taking a look at the Fed and the interest rate outlook. Most people on Wall Street now expect the Fed to start cutting rates in June and lower rates three times this year. And that's pretty much in line with the Fed's own predictions. Yet the market, which is very exuberant about this prospect, I should say, but yet a growing group of prominent economists is now speculating that the Fed won't cut rates at all this year or might cut just once. They argue that inflation is accelerating, the economy is too hot to justify three rate cuts, and the Fed either shouldn't or won't do it. So I thought we might start by asking you to unpack the argument for us. What's driving it? I'm curious as to whether you agree and what the implications would be for the stock market if the Fed took a pass this year for justifiable reasons, of course.
Right. Well, I'd first like to point out that starting this year, the expectations were for seven rate cuts in 2024. And now we have expectations for three. And despite lopping off four rate cuts from the expectations, the market is S&P 500 is up around 10%. And I think that tells us a lot about what is happening. I think people are looking at the economy and they're looking at inflation saying, you know what, this is an economy that is too strong for the Fed to be cutting rates in. And, you know, there's a very good chance that they're right, that if the economy continues to hold up the way it is with an inflation rate that's, you know, below 4%, economic growth right now is pointing to something along the lines of 2% or in change for the first quarter. It's a market that may not need rate cuts. I mean, I think what's helping the market a lot is that you have a Fed that has really looked at the situation and, you know, is it going to be three? Is it going to be two? Is it going to be none? It doesn't really matter as long as the bias is towards cutting. And I think Edyard Denny put it really well. He put out a note last night where he said basically that the Fed put is back. For those of you who remember, the Fed put is this idea that the Fed will be there to boost the stock market when needed. And it really went away as the Fed started to this inflation battle where, you know, the market dropping was actually seen as a good thing because that actually made monetary conditions tighter. It helped fight inflation. And the Fed really needed to get inflation under control. And so this idea that the Fed would step in to prop up the market kind of went by the wayside. But Yardeni thinks that the Fed is back. And he basically says that, you know, they think that the Fed thinks that inflation is close enough to the 2% target that they have to, they really should try to make sure that they prevent a recession. That's more important at this point than inflation. Of course, if we get a couple more prints like we did in January and February, when, you know, there's a little bit of the seasonality kind of stuff makes inflation look hotter, then the Fed might have to go back to inflation fighting. But I think as long as the bias is towards cutting rates, even if it doesn't cut, and even if those cuts get pushed off into 2025, I'm not sure the market cares as long as the growth is holding up.
Right. And the Fed has essentially said it is willing to cut rates and ready to, if necessary.
That's
so
right.
Let's talk about the economy a little bit more. At some point, we have to acknowledge that whether the Fed cuts rates or not, this is an economy worth celebrating. Jobs are plentiful, wages are rising, corporate earnings are growing, even the housing market is strong. And remain so. So I think it's time to think about one of the reasons that stocks have been rising is not just the possibility of rate cuts, but the fact that good news about the economy really is good news at last. And
yeah,
things keep going this way. So what's your take on that?
No, I think you're absolutely right. It's the reason that the if the Fed was going from 7 rate cuts to 3 and the economy looked like it was slowing precipitously, you would not have a market hitting all-time highs. I think people would be freaking out. But instead, you have this situation where things are okay. We have an economy that seems to be working pretty well. You know, people don't feel good about it. And I think that there's a lot of leftover angst from, you know, inflation running as high as it was, and prices, no, their prices aren't coming down. They're going to remain at these levels. And it takes a long time to get used to. You know, I was in the supermarket the other day and I was looking at some organic refried beans and it was over $4.50 a can. And that's just mind boggling. So I'm not getting organic refried beans. But, you know,
you can fry them yourself.
Or I could just, you know, go and get the Goya, which isn't organic, but costs less than half of that. But, you know, that sticks with us. But the economy seems to be working really well. And that's, I mean, I think that's something to feel, that is something to try to feel good about. And it's something to look at the stock market and think that, you know, maybe things are, we shouldn't be as pessimistic as we have been. There's still like a lot of worry out there. And, you know, they say stock markets climb walls of worry. And so I think you're absolutely right that this is all about good news being good news, that the economy is growing. It might not be growing super fast, and that's probably a good thing as well. And we have to wait and see what happens with inflation.
So what about corporate earnings? I mentioned that earnings are rising. What's the current view about this year's earnings outlook?
Well, earnings are supposed to hit about $244 for an aggregate for the S&P 500. And that's going to be up, that's around 12% or so. There's a lot of worry about this as well. You're going to keep hearing me say worry because that's what we have out there. Morgan Stanley put out a note this morning just talking about the great expectations, demand and earnings boom that you have to, that the only way this market can be worth as much as it is, the earnings have to come through. And there's some worry that there might not be. I was looking at Trivariate, that's Adam Parker. I don't know if anyone remembers him. He used to be the head of U.S. equity strategy at Morgan Stanley. He has his own shop now called Trivariate. He was looking at how earnings are supposed to play out this year. What's been happening, and this is, to me, this is interesting, is that first and second quarter earnings forecasts have been cut, but third and fourth quarter have been increased. So you're looking at a back half loaded earnings sequence. So you're supposed to get this acceleration as we come into the second half of the year. And that, you know, creates problems because it does mean you have to be willing to think that, okay, we're going to have an okay, that things are going to start to accelerate. And that's really not, it doesn't feel like anyone really wants to believe that right now, but that's what's being priced into the market. The folks at SocGen, though, had came out and they basically think this is really actually the market is not ahead of itself, that it is seeing three things. One is AI. Okay, we all know about the AI boom, and that's lifted things. But they also point out about the reshoring boom, and that it, the things like the CHIPS Act have caused industrial stocks to do really, really well. I don't know if you look at the charts on those things, but they are fantastic. And then the third thing they see is that now you have improving credit conditions and lending standards, and they think that's going to be good for the financials. And so when they put all this together, they not only see 12% earnings growth this year, that's up from their previous prediction of 5%, but they see 11% in 2025 as well. And that's the recipe for a market that can keep going up. I'm not sure it can keep going up the way that it has. And we had an incredible year last year. We had an amazing start to this year, but it is the recipe for a market that just keeps going higher. Basically your typical kind of bull market. And I think that's, in some ways that I was reading RBC this morning, Lori Calvesina, and she always had some great observations. But one of the things that she was pointing out, she started out as a small cap strategist. And she was looking at how small caps have performed. And to her, they signaled that we really came very close to a recession in 2022. And that it might have been narrowly avoided. You know, it was never called by it was never officially called a recession, but it came very close. And what we're seeing now is really the kind of market response that you would get post-recession. And she does call this, she said, we're in the midst of one of the most odd and confusing recoveries in U.S. equity market history. But that is what it feels like, that this is the recovery from a recession that it was never really called.
Boy, that seems the best of both worlds. You have a recession, you don't admit it, and you begin to recover.
Right. And it leaves everybody puzzled. It's like, why didn't we get our recession yet? But what's interesting is we did actually technically meet the definition. Remember, there were those two quarters,
Yep.
where it was negative, but everyone was saying, oh, it was just these tech, it was these things within there that made it not really a recession. But maybe
we blamed
it
on COVID. It was the great COVID exception. So, and we should note that the market is broadening as well as stocks continue to go higher, which is a good sign.
It is a good sign. It's not just tech. And then you can find a lot of stocks that are doing quite well. And I wish we had picked some of them. But every time I go looking at a stock to see if, hey, maybe we should be buying it, it looks like it's, you know, horribly extended and at a 52-week high. So we keep looking.
Indeed. All right, I want to switch to another story that is making headlines this morning. The CEO of Boeing is stepping down. Boeing, of course, has had a series of problems going back well before Calhoun's tenure. And now the company is going to need to find a new CEO, and it's going to need to fix the mess. There are a lot of questions here, Ben, for you. What happened, and who could be the likely successors, and what are the ramifications of this giant mess?
Yeah, I mean, Boeing is a mess. I mean, it's really the only word that you can use to describe it. It's been a mess for a long time. It's a mess when we had the horrible accidents of the 737 MAXs. And in some ways, I think the fact that that was a software problem let people paper over the fact that there were other issues at Boeing as well.
There seem to be hardware problems.
There are hardware problems there too. And I think a lot of this just has to do with what happened. Part of this is just decisions that it made on its own about which planes to build and how to build it. But it's also, I think, disruptions still. You mentioned COVID earlier. It's disruptions from COVID you know, so many workers that really knew stuff, they've left. You have a newer workforce, but you also have a company that's really trying to keep up with orders and couldn't do it. And so corners got cut, it sounds like.
That's the cultural problem.
Right. And, you know, what we heard Dave Calhoun saying today when he spoke on CNBC is that Boeing needs to slow down. It needs to get its supply chain in order. It needs to get its manufacturing in order. And they made a lot of big changes to do it. This isn't Calhoun's fault. You know, he took over. These problems are already there when he took over and was tasked with trying to turn the company around. But it was made much more difficult by COVID and everything else that's going on. And so this is the first step in trying to fix Boeing. It's going to be painful. I think it's going to be painful, for Boeing, where we're going to see, fewer planes getting shipped out, and its free cash flow and earnings will probably not be what they had thought it would be over the next year or two. But it's going to also be painful for airlines who really need new planes, want new planes, and there are going to be fewer new planes for them to have. And it's not like Airbus could just say, okay, we're going to make more, because if they try to make more, they could run into similar manufacturing issues if you're trying to go too fast. I mean, these are hard to make. They're huge.
Right. It's too much of a good thing.
Right. And so there's a limit on how much they can build and how quickly. And so it's not like they could just say, hey, yeah, here are a couple dozen more Airbus, just take them.
I want to ask you the Barron's question in all this. This is what we ask every day about everything. Is the stock a buy at this point?
Well, before this announcement, you know, Al and I had been talking, and, you know, the technical level to buy at was about 175. We got very close to that. We got to, I think, 177-ish, a little bit above that. I think that would have been the place if you're someone who really wanted to take a flyer on Boeing stock. I think that would have been the place to really take that flyer. Right now, it's quite a bit off that level. We're up to 191.
191, yep.
We're coming up to a lot of resistance at 200. And I think that you let the stock do its thing right now. I think you watch it. I think you watch that 200 level and you watch that 175 level. And you see how it trades in this kind of range. And if it can break through to the upside in that 200, it might be worth buying. And it could be worth buying if it gets down to 175 again. But I think this is very early in the process. We really don't know who is going to take over as CEO. It's Al Root has written about this. He wrote about it before Calhoun's announcement. He wrote about it again that, there's no easy solution to this. Someone like Larry Culp would be a great person to try to fix things. Like, he did such a great job at GE by going in there and really just having he didn't worry about GE's history. He just went in and said, this is what I need to do to get.
And that's what you need at Boeing at this point.
It's exactly what you need. But can you convince, he's separating, the split at GE is happening now this month, where you're going to finally have it split into the last two parts, GE Aerospace and GE Vernova, which is the power business. Al doesn't think he's going to want to leave GE right now, just as he's finishing up this split. And would he even want to go and do another one of these big turnarounds like he just did? I would want to go hit the beach. There's some internal candidates, but it sounds like people don't want the internal candidates. You have the head of Spirit Aerosystems could be another person, but it's hard to see who's going to do this, which is, I think, why they're taking their time. Calhoun is going to step down, officially give up the reins at the end of this year. And I think the reason is that finding the right person who can really right this ship is going to be a difficult process, and we'll have to let that play out.
We should point out there are a couple of winners here, and that's the parts companies that supply and repair airline parts. Do you want to talk about those for a minute?
Sure. One of the things that's going to happen is that airlines are going to have to rely on their older planes, and the older planes are going to require more maintenance. And that is good news for the companies who do that maintenance and supply the parts. HEICO is one of them. That's just a fantastic performing stock. It's done very well. GE Aerospace. One of the reasons GE has done so well is because this aerospace business, and they do a lot of aftermarket work, providing the parts for maintenance on these planes. And when Al wrote about Boeing, we had I'm not sure if it was a cover or not, but he had a big feature story in the magazine. He also mentioned, I have actually no idea how the stock is pronounced, but TransDigm or TransDigm, TDG is the
TransDigm.
TransDigm. Oh, right. Yeah. So that's a stock that's trading at its 52-week high. So a lot of this is already in these stocks. They're doing well. And they are, they're trading at least 52 week highs, because there's gonna be more work to do until Boeing gets its problems worked out. And the other one that I find interesting as well is that if you look at, this isn't a part supplier, but take a look at the chart of Embraer, the Brazilian airplane maker. They're the largest after Boeing and Airbus. They make smaller planes. I actually just flew in one when I flew from New York to Chicago. It's about 100, 120 people on the plane. But that stock recently took off at the beginning of this month. It just went from under 20 to now $27 a share, just like that.
This is an opportunity for them.
Especially these shorter flights, Embraer planes are going to be really in demand. Airlines are going to have to figure out how to plug this gap, and Embraer is one beneficiary. Unfortunately, after this move, I think a lot of that's priced into the stock. We'll have to see how it trades from here. Is there a pullback that might be worth buying? But that stock is clearly a beneficiary.
This just illustrates that for every bit of bad news on Wall Street, you should always look at the flip side. Somebody is going to benefit.
That's right.
So good rundown of Boeing's problems and opportunities, frankly. Let's talk about some companies reporting earnings this week, Ben. We've got GameStop tomorrow, the former meme stock. What's the story there? It has had a miserable 12 months. What are we expecting from earnings?
Yeah, I mean, what's crazy is that the meme trade is really, you always think the meme trade is done, I should say.
Or it goes elsewhere.
Right. Or, and then you look at the market and you're like, oh, wait, so GameStop is up 13%. There's nothing I see that should explain why the stock has jumped this much ahead of earnings. You know, is it short?
But it's down about 40% over the past year.
That's right. It's down. It was down 18% over the last 3 months. It was down 40% over the last 12 months. You know, earnings are getting slightly better. Sales are getting slightly worse. You know, it's a retail. It's a small retailer, and a business is getting really disrupted. You know, people are not buying games. You know, they're not buying those discs anymore to put into their machines. They're just buying them online. I see it with my son. You know, he goes on to his PlayStation 5. He's like, Dad, can I use my allowance to buy X game? And I say, sure. He hands over the cash. We go online. We buy the game, and he goes and plays. And you know, so it's a business that they are still going to have to figure out what is their role in the future gaming business. But it's still, as you can see, there's still that interest in the stock. Anytime that something like this gains 13% in one day, just ahead of earnings, you got to wonder what's going on. The other good thing for its shares is that it really had been trending downward very consistently for much of the past, 3 years. And perhaps it is finding a bottom here. And you know, at some point it has to give up, like the meme stuff has to just go away, and it just needs to go back to being a struggling retailer that can get its act together. Because we've seen with some of the clothing retailers, like Abercrombie and Fitch was one where everyone thought, oh, here's a clothing retailer that doesn't really have a future, and all of a sudden it's gained more than Nvidia. And that was by taking market share and those kind of things. And so focus on the business. That's what it needs to do.
Absolutely. All right, let's talk about Carnival. This is a stock. Carnival, of course, is the cruise line operator. The stock is up almost 100% over the past 12 months. We should remember, of course, that cruise lines had a near-death experience during COVID, but they're back and everybody seems to want to book a cruise.
Not I either.
But what is the outlook for Carnival?
It's a very interesting one. There are, you know, the business is clearly doing better. There are people who want to take cruises. Jefferies, though, worries about really about what happened with the rerouting of ships in the Red Sea area. You know, with all the missile attacks going on and things like that, they've had to put their ships elsewhere. And they think that they worry that that's going to hurt costs a bit. You know, the strong bookings are there. The occupancy is supposed to be its highest ever, but you are going to have this offset in having to reroute ships. And that caused at least Jefferies to revise their revenue lower.
How many cruises go to the Red Sea? That seems a little odd.
I don't have an exact number on that, but I think it would be anything in that kind of area that they just have to be careful with. And so Jefferies thinks it's big enough to be a problem. And so we'll watch how it's trading. I think one good thing is that when you look at the way the stock's been trading, it has pulled back off of these highs. It looked like it was creating almost a double top when it peaked at the beginning of this year. But the low wasn't that low, and it actually came in right where the chart watchers would expect it to be, just around 15, a little bit under there, and it's now trying to bounce back. And so if it can have a pretty decent earnings report, perhaps it, you know, the next, this technical level is probably up around, close to 20. If it can get through 20, the upside looks really great. It's right now at about 17.23. But this earnings report, I think, is going to be a pretty important one.
I have a question for you apart from corporate earnings. We've talked about a number of stocks today and you've talked about the technical levels.
Yeah.
Do you combine technical and fundamental analysis, and when is the right time to do that?
Yeah, I do. You know, whenever I'm thinking about how the stock can react to something, I'm always looking at the tech. I don't make a decision based purely on the technicals. But what they do is they help with assessing when to get in, when to get out, and to manage the position after you've made those decisions. And so this is, you know, when you look at Carnival, it's one where, you know, let's say I've been in this stock at some from when it started to rally, let's say around November, and it gets up to 19. So I have like a $5 profit, and now I see it pulling back. Well, I want to see it hold that 15, and it kind of does. And so these are the things where I'm just looking to think about how might the stock respond. And so it's also something where if a stock has been running up a lot and runs into resistance and then releases an earnings report, I have to think that, okay, the risk might be that the report is that there's a lot of good news priced in here, and it needs to have a very good report to get through that resistance. But if you do get that report, then you get the breakout. So it's just a way for me to think about what the market is keying in on as we come into these kind of events. And it's also just, if I see a stock, which I like, that has been doing well, and I see it pull back, and it pulls back to fundamental levels, and I start, or to technical levels that look like where you'd expect them to, and you're looking at the numbers, the fundamentals, and you're thinking, you know what, I see the stock pulling back, but the earnings are, revisions are going higher, it's at this support level, that gives me one more reason to want to think about buying it.
All right. I'm glad that you explained all of that to us.
I hope I explained it. I'm not sure that made any sense whatsoever.
No, it made it made sense to me, but then I sit next to you and we talk about this all day. So now back to regularly scheduled programming. Let's spend a moment talking about RH, the furniture and housewares retailer. The company is reporting on Wednesday, and the stock is up about 20% over the past year.
Right. And it's another It's another one that's pulled back recently. It's down about 5% over the last 3 months. Its earnings are coming down. It's supposed to have a profit of $1.67, which would be down from $2.88, though its sales are up a tiny bit, really flattish, $778 million again, are expected. That's against $772 million a year ago during the same quarter. There's bearish chatter out there from places like Wedbush. Wedbush is really worried. They just see that they're... RH is not competing well against other high-end furniture stores. You have Williams Sonoma. That stock's been doing very well. They think that Wedbush thinks that RH is actually losing market share, and that they're having some delays in getting new products out there, which could create some further problems. On the other hand, our Jacob Sonnenschein wrote about RH in the Trader column this past weekend, and he actually thinks that the stock looks good here. He acknowledges these problems, but he thinks that the company is getting closer to it. Also notes that the stock has is a lot cheaper relative to the S&P than it normally is. Historically, it's been had a multiple that's about twice the S&P 500. Right now, it's at 23 to the S&P's 20. And so he thinks that if you just start getting a little bit better news, there's room for the stock to go up. I'll go with Jacob. He's been pretty good at this kind of stuff, and we'll see what happens though when they report on Wednesday.
All right, we will definitely keep an eye on that. I want to get to some listener questions. We have a ton of them coming in, and then perhaps we can go back to some other topics we've talked about. We have a question from Chip, tough one to answer. Where is the best place to put your money for the next 30 days? Any thoughts about that?
I do. I mean, I think it's one where if I need money in 30 days, if you need the money in 30 days, there's only one place to put it, and that's cash.
Yep.
And thankfully, you can get, 4 or 5% on your cash right now, which is great. The thing about the market is where you put your long-term money. It's not where you put money that you're going to need anytime soon. And so the closer in you need it, the more careful you have to be. So if you really need it in 30 days, you probably want it in cash. You know, if it's something that's going to be put on as a mortgage on your, or you're going to put a down payment on a house, maybe over the next year, you want it in something liquid and something safe. The stock market is a long duration asset. It's something where you need to be able to put your money in there and let it sit, because it's going to go up, it's going to go down. But it's the kind of thing that when you look back, 10 years later, 20 years later, 30 years later, it should be higher. But you don't want to have to need that money anytime soon, because you know, the way Murphy's Law works, you know, the moment, if you need it in 30 days, you're going to have a sell-off in the market within those 30 days. And, you know, you'll have to go sell at the bottom of this thing. And then that costs you money. So I would say that, you know, this is really a portfolio it's an allocation a problem. And you just have to think about when you need the money. And if you do, that should determine where the money is going to go.
That's a good answer. Next week, I'm going to ask you what to do for the next 30 years instead of 30 days, but we'll leave that question. Chuck has a question about NVIDIA, and so does Maurice. And really, what is the outlook for NVIDIA, and should investors buy it on dips?
Right. I think NVIDIA is it's such a strong stock, even on a day like today where, it's not an enthusiastic day for the stock market. You know, it's not down a lot. Dow's down 0.3, NASDAQ 0.2, S&P 0.2. Guess what's up on the day? It's NVIDIA. Not a ton, but it's up 0.8%. The stock is extremely overbought right now. You know, it's got an RSI of a 14-day RSI. This is a relative strength indicator that just tells you it's a short-term measure of how overbought or oversold the stock is. And it's pretty high. It's been high for a long time, and the dips are not huge. But it does feel like a stock right now that you buy on the dips. You know, if you've owned it for a long time, it's one that I think you trade around. I mean, this stock has been on a tear for quite a while. And, you know, hopefully it's the kind of thing where if you own it, you know, you can sell some as it rips, you know, but hold on to a core position, buy on the dips if that's the way you want to do things, or you can just hold for a while. But I would just, you know, it's one of these things that I just would let it run until you start to see the signs that something is fundamentally changing in the business. But right now it just keeps beating all these numbers that are extremely high already. And I think you just got to ride with that.
It's really quite a phenomenon.
Yeah, it's so amazing.
Switching to a completely different asset class, Vic asks about the importance of gold in a turbulent market. And I don't know that I'd call this market turbulent, but it's been a wonderful market for gold.
Yeah, it really has been for gold. You know, gold is a tough one because people say all kinds of things about why gold goes up. And I think most of them, if you look at the charts on gold, you have to say, what are you talking about? You know, they say it's an inflation hedge, but it doesn't always do well when inflation is rising. But I think it does do well when people are concerned about, you know, it's not even market volatility because, Lauren, as you point out, the market is not very volatile right now. Right. I just think it's partially it's about when people are scared and they're looking for something. I think there's also a lot going on with the dollar that, you know, if you look at the ETFs, the gold ETFs, they're not seeing a lot of inflows. They might even be seeing outflows, but you're seeing central banks want to buy gold. And I think that's partially because they're looking for alternatives to the dollar, and there really isn't anything. There's no other real currency that can be an alternative in terms of as a store of value. And so they're turning to gold. And so I think that's just, it's just something where you have to just trade on the technicals and trade those technicals kind of longer term. And let the, you know, as long as gold is kind of in this uptrend that it's in right now, you just let it do its thing. It just broke out of a what had been a range that had lasted, it peaked in around July of 2020. And then it kept hitting those highs, near those same highs again in 2022, in 2023. And now we're back to, we just broke those highs in 2024. And so I think you look for it to start trading higher from here, which it has. And just watch these levels where it was around, it was around 195, 200. And as long as it's above 195, I'm not going to worry about gold. I'm just going to let it do its thing.
And it's been doing its thing quite well.
It really has.
So quite amazing. All right. We talked about a lot of other aircraft companies. Howard has a question about RTX. That's Raytheon. What's the outlook there?
You know, Raytheon's a tough one because they have their own manufacturing issues, and that's partially why the stock has had issues of late. if the it has been rallying, though, you know, you saw that this back in August is when it took its first big hit, and then it sold off with the market through the end of October. And it's been coming back since then. And I think if it has its problems, its manufacturing issues behind it, it should do better. It can actually play some catch up. And we're coming to that level now where we're almost back to where it was when it gapped down. The valuation is higher, but it's not near its peak. So I think there's some room here, but it has to show that it really has gotten past its manufacturing issues and can take advantage of, the kind of the aftermarket opportunities that are out there.
All right. We have a question from Larry, not about specific company, but an interesting question. What stocks that you follow or like have not had big up moves or are not near their 52-week highs?
Huh. I wish I had scanned this earlier. Give me one second. I'm going to take
a quick... We can come back to it next week if Larry wants to tune in.
Yeah, that actually is not a bad idea because it's one of the things that I've been looking forward to. We do have, you know, as we look for picks, as we look for things that, you know, we want to buy, you know, that's often where I'm looking. One of the things I would say is like, you look at something like Newmont, gold prices are rising, but the gold miners have not done well this year. Newmont is actually down over 17%. So that might be something I would watch. I would also kind of watch some of these companies that, you know, here's one. I might keep an eye on Apple. Apple's gotten beaten up this year. Is sentiment too negative? It might be. So I'd keep an eye on Apple. I'd keep an eye on some of the biotechs that got beaten up. You know, there's like Biogen has gotten beaten up. That might be one to keep an eye on. So some things like that. But I think you have to look for the what am I trying to say? The idiosyncratic stories. Because if it's not up, then you have to ask why and what's going to change things. But those are a few things that I would think of.
A fair point. Good question.
And very good question.
You're good on your feet, Ben. I appreciate that.
Let's try.
Let's close with a look at the housing market. There was a very small drop in new home sales today. Mortgages were higher in February. That is, the mortgage rate was higher at 7.3% than it had been in January. What is the outlook for pending home sales coming Thursday? And how would you sum up in about the 2 minutes left the outlook for the U.S. housing market?
You know, the housing market just confounds me. You know, if you had told me
not alone.
Right. If you had told me that mortgages were going to be this high and that prices would sort of hold up, housing prices would hold up, I would have told you were crazy. But there has been this issue of just not enough houses. And so, you know, the supply and demand, you know, there's still more demand than there is supply, even at this level. I think one of the things to keep an eye on is there going to be more supply coming to the market, and how are buyers and sellers going to react to that? Peter Buchvar was pointing this out, that you're seeing more houses on the market. And that has that could become a worrisome thing if it gets to the point where there are too many houses and that causes prices to drop. But you look at the housing stocks right now, and many of them are at 52-week highs. So I was looking at KBH this morning. I think they had earnings recently. They've done very well. They're close to an all-time high. I think Toll Brothers is the same. And that's telling you that at least the big guys are doing okay. And, you know, they have advantages that others don't in terms of being able to use their balance sheets to assist buyers and whatnot. But the stocks seem to think that the housing market's going to hold up okay. So I'll go with that for now.
Follow the market. The stock market, that is.
It's what I always do.
Indeed. All right, Ben, we're out of time today. Thank you so much for sharing your insights. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Lauren.
And thank you to our listeners for your terrific questions. We'll save some of them for next week. Please join us again next Monday when I will be talking stocks and markets again with Ben. Our guest will be Michael Cugino, President and Portfolio Manager of the Permanent Portfolio Family of Funds. The Permanent Portfolio invests across asset classes. everything from stocks and bonds to currencies and gold. It's actually quite interesting. And Michael has a lot of thoughts on all these markets. We hope you'll come back next Monday for what should be a fascinating discussion. Until then, everyone, stay well and have a good week.